Well, hello, leader. I'm Nancy Grunett with First Sign Employee Assistance Program. Welcome to our Leadership Inspired podcast, where we help people be better at work. All right, well, welcome to the show. We have a return guest back today. We have Jessica Cabrera back. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, great to be here.
We just so enjoyed Jessica last time when she was on the show. She shared with us 5 leadership practices that she developed to support and help grassroots leaders show up, step up, link up, team up, and speak up. If you haven't listened to that show, go back and listen to it. Those are awesome, not only for grassroots leaders, but I believe for all leaders. So we just so enjoyed Jessica. We wanted to have her back. So welcome back.
Thanks. We have about another great conversation.
Yes, and we have actually kind of a two-part conversation. I wanted to discover more about some things that Jessica's involved with the Association for Talent Development. And also, she works with a lot of volunteers in that capacity, and I thought, what a great topic. What about when you're a leader and working with volunteers? How does that differ? And if you had any pointers for us about working with volunteers, but let's start with the Association for Talent Development. Tell us a little bit about the association.
Yeah, sure. So ATD, that's the acronym for the Association for Talent Development, is a global organization. They're actually ATD chapters in 120 countries all over the globe. So just an incredible global organization that isn't only geographically global, but also very global in its industry reach, because there are learning and development type roles in every industry. So it's rather interesting to be a part of, because there's so many different industries involved in the same organization. But in addition to it's a global organization. A lot of times I'll say the national organization based out just right outside of Washington, D.C. We also have local chapters all over the country. And so in the state of South Carolina, we have ATD chapter. And if you look for us online today, you're going to find it at atdmidlands.org, but we are actually in the process of a name change right now that was just approved in a bylaws vote of the membership, and we will be ATD South Carolina. So we are a statewide chapter, and we have geographical groups all over the state of South Carolina, 3 in particular. We are in the upstate, the Midlands, and the Lowcountry. And it's a professional membership organization. We support those who develop the knowledge and the skills of employees, or the knowledge and the skills of other professionals. And the reason I say it that way is because, you know, you used to call these folks trainers. And now this role is blending into so many different critical departments and roles within organizations, that it is no longer just a training department or a training division, but rather a much more holistic talent development function within an organization that can range all the way from your, you know, instructional designers or learning and development professionals to your managers, you know, frontline managers. You can have your performance consultants within your organization, and really just anyone that's in the business of equipping others to excel in their work.
And human resources professionals too, I imagine.
Yes, we are very much focused on the learning function and the development of talent. So historically, that really did live in HR. But what we're seeing in the recent years, over the past 10, 15 years, we've seen a huge shift in the industry that often a core HR function is now functioning separate from the talent development function in many organizations. Not that they don't go hand in hand, and many times they are under one umbrella, but the talent development function now is often taking its own, you know, however you want to think of it, column or C-suite position in the organization with chief talent officers or chief people development officers, something along those lines.
So that it's a professional association, what can the members look to for the organization to provide them?
Yeah, well, you know, when you are a member of ATD, the parent organization, you are going to get a ton of research and industry-leading information, books, webcasts, events, educational programs, conferences.
Wow.
And this is really an industry leader for talent development. If you're looking for what is happening in the industry right now, they are constantly researching that, and the research is guiding the conversation. So there's a state of the industry report produced by ATD every year. There's also a credentialing, the Certified Professional in Talent Development, CPTD, which is the credentialing for certified talent development professionals. And that's really the core function of that organization. Whereas when you get to joining your local chapter, that's where you really find your strong professional community. Here in South Carolina, we offer trusted content, idea sharing, and a strong professional community. Those are the three pillars of what we provide for our members. And we do that through monthly learning events, and we have a plethora of different organized groups within our organization. So for example, we have the geographical groups, which I just mentioned. So even though you join the chapter in the state of South Carolina, you have access to each of the learning events from each geographical area. We also have what we call a special interest group, and affectionately known as a SIG. We have two SIGs in the state of South Carolina. One is for career transitions. So for those who are transitioning in their career, considering transitioning, maybe we actually launched this as a result of COVID because of so many people being furloughed and or laid off. And so we wanted to provide a space for talent development professionals to be able to transition well. And we have another special interest group for learning technologies. So for those who are trying to look into the technologies that are used, whether it be gamification or Adobe products in order to produce learning content, or e-learning, building e-learning modules, whatever it might take in using technologies. We even did an event recently that was focused on app-based workplace management tools. So project management tools that are app-based that your team can share and that you can learn, you know, you can collaborate with one another through app-based software. So the technology special interest group focuses exclusively on that. We have a study group, we have a scholarship fund, and we also just have a great, we call it the ATD family here in South Carolina. We just have an incredible community of professionals that all care about helping other people excel at whatever they are, whatever they do. So it's an incredible community to be a part of.
Two things caught my ear. One is gamification. I keep hearing more about that. How does that play? Well, no pun intended, I guess. How does that play out? What is gamification, and how can workplace leaders use that to develop their folks?
Oh gosh, we could do a whole hour on what is gamification and how can you use it. But we actually hosted a learning event for that purpose, actually 4 hours of going through that, we partnered with a company called Sententia, who offered a half-day certification for our members to be able to learn about what is gamification and how can you use it. But I guess I would say, for a brief response, I would say that gamification is, I'm trying to think of a different verb than using gamify, but I might just have to use it.
That's okay.
Gamifying your learning experience. So whether that be through an on-demand learning experience where you get badges and rewards and things, or even a face-to-face learning experience where there are different gamified elements to your learning. And these days, especially as we have not only the millennial generation in the workplace, but we also have each generation after millennials coming up the pipeline, they have really grown up with games as the way that they do life. I'm not just talking about, you know, video games, although that is a big foundation of it, but also gamified experiences, you know, getting dollars in elementary school as a reward for good behavior. And then you can spend those dollars on a cheap prize in the cafeteria when you're in fifth grade. That same experience is now happening in the workplace where people are getting, you know, badges and crowns and fake money and LinkedIn badges and sometimes a gift card. I mean, just all sorts of little incentivizing rewards, as well as not just a rewards-based system, but even getting points, anything that kind of creates a competitive or a drive to accomplish the next step in the process is a way to leverage gamification in the learning space.
That is so interesting that you kind of connect those dots from, you know, how people were raised and now they're adults in the workplace and leaders themselves, and they just respond and that resonates with them. My mind was going was truly the gaming, and my niece was playing a game on her laptop, and it was, the point of the game was you had to run a restaurant and you had to serve your customers. If you didn't serve them fast enough, they got angry and, you know, their little faces would turn redder and redder until the point where they left. But you also had to take care of your employees. And if the employees got burnt out, they didn't serve the customers fast enough, then the employees would quit. And it was, I thought, you know what, this is a good lesson in how you win the game. You should take care of the employees first. And when the employees are taken care of, then they take care of the customers, you know, very well. And, you know, she and I talked about that. Right? So is that kind of along those lines, you know, lessons learned from those kinds of platforms?
Oh, sure. I mean, even in the workplace, there are true games like what you're talking about that can be used to teach people, develop employees to learn how to follow a process, to learn how to complete a task, or even to learn how to execute on soft skills that can be done through a true game, you know, an actual gaming system that has been built through a gaming, you know, software. I personally don't have that skill set, but there are lots of companies out there that are developing games and apps for businesses to gamify a learning experience. So for sure, like your niece's experience is obviously that, I mean, that's how kids are learning these days. Schools are providing the children with different math games that are teaching them how to do math through a game. Mm-hmm. And my kids had to learn how to type on a keyboard, and it's done through a game. You know, the faster you type, the more balloons pop, and there are prizes inside the balloons, and you collect points, and all of these things are happening, but you have to type accurately. And the more mistakes you make, the less points you get, and so on and so forth. And so, I mean, I would say it's almost ubiquitous these days. It's everywhere. Right. But the workplace, it's definitely also taking root, and lots of companies are deciding to go that route in order to create an engaging learning experience.
Very interesting. I can remember 15, 20 years ago, this might have played out as, you know, Google used to be always in the headlines, or Google's having a basketball court put in. And, oh my gosh, you let your employees play basketball? And that's unheard of. Or, you know, they throw beach balls around the cubicle. Oh, that's unheard of. So the world of work has definitely changed from 15, 20 years.
Oh, by far. Yeah, it definitely is changing for sure. And those that aren't open to that change are going to fall behind for sure.
The second question I had was,
world out there.
You know, you talk about the association as being a fantastic resource to kind of keep your pulse on what's coming, what's next. And boy, COVID-19 has really changed, put everything on edge. As a professional in my workplace, I attend conferences. I probably attend, I don't even know, 10 conferences a year. And boy, this year, all those conferences are via Zoom or some other platform. And so where do you see, once this stuff is over, COVID-19 more or less to be affected, be over, is that stuff going to stick around, or what do you think?
So do you mean virtual events?
Virtual events and virtual learning versus having a trainer come in and do some training in person.
Oh, definitely. COVID is going to change the outlook of how we do things for forever. And I do believe that we will adopt a lot. There will be a much more open and rapid adoption of long-term adoption of these platforms because of COVID than we would have ever had prior to COVID. At the same time, I do believe that human beings are created to be in community and to share with one another. And so I really see the virtual world becoming, number one, a tool for saving money. And so it's really going to create access, especially to those companies and organizations that could otherwise not afford some of the types of conferences or programming or even guest speakers for that matter, that they will be able to leverage access to these things if they're willing to take a virtual delivery method. And I definitely see that changing. I also believe that a virtual option is going to become a very, very popular item in the future. Whenever we are able to go to another conference that has 500, 1,000, 5,000 people at it again, I believe that the virtual live streams of conferences and of conference sessions will become a much more popular thing. So that is something that had been happening a little bit here and there, but I expect that to take on a whole new face. And folks are going to have a lot of choices when it comes to how they access their information. And of course, when we talk about delivery or even, maybe having folks come into your workplace to do team building or to do a retreat or something like that, I think those things will still happen face to face, but I do believe that there will be a lot more blended solutions where the workplace will maybe choose to have a face-to-face event, learning event of sorts, but then will be able to organize around some virtual events, maybe in between two face-to-face events. Or I just believe there's going to be a widespread adoption of and readiness to utilize virtual delivery. So it's going to expand the opportunities for people, and it's also going to expand the delivery method, but it's not going to eliminate one method over another, in my opinion.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, so I want to completely switch gears and talk about the volunteer kinds of questions that I had. You work through ADT, you work with volunteers, correct?
Through ATD, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ATD, you know, and this is pretty much the case in most places, but in the state of South Carolina, we have the board of directors, we have three geographical leadership teams. We have two special interest group leadership teams, and we are statewide, and the entire organization is led by volunteers.
Yes. So, and
one staff person.
Yes. And so, and many workplace leaders find themselves in situations just like that. They might be involved in a committee, but they're in charge, you know, they're the chair of the committee, or they volunteer in other, I mean, even in their personal lives, people who I think serve in leadership roles just kind of naturally gravitate that, whether it be through their church or scouts or other community things. And then, of course, you could be a workplace, you could be a leader in the workplace, for example, nonprofits, where you actually work with volunteers from the community that come into your workplace and you have to interact with them in a volunteer capacity. So how does being a leader for volunteers, how does that differ, or does it, from being a leader when you're working with a paid, you know, paid direct reports or your paid team members?
Yeah, I really believe that there is a lot that is the same, mm-hmm. but there may be a lot of leaders out there that are not functioning in the way that they would function with a volunteer group. So I'll tell you kind of what my thought is on that.
Yeah.
I believe leadership across the board is most effective when you are driven by your mission. So if you are a mission-driven leader, you will be most effective in your work. And I believe that to be true, whether you are in the corporate world, the nonprofit world, the volunteer world, wherever you are, having your why at the beginning of everything that you do is going to make you more effective at doing that thing. With volunteer leaders, that is critically important, in my opinion. And it is remiss to try to work with a volunteer group based on whatever the task at hand is or whatever the operational need is without addressing why this person would be doing that on a volunteer basis and constantly reiterating it over and over and over again so that everyone is always on the same page about why we do what we do.
Brilliant. I love it. Say more. I can see you have more to say.
Well, what I think is that in the workplace, when you have paid direct reports, people quickly lose sight of that. And so your eyes are quickly start to gaze towards operations and getting things done and just checking things off the list, deliverables. But leaders often forget to keep the reason why you do what you do at the forefront. And I believe that workplace leaders would be more effective if they led as if they were leading a team of volunteers versus leading.
Oh, interesting.
You're leading a team of people who are paid to do what they do. On the volunteer leadership side of things, what I think is, you know, the biggest difference, because you asked, you know, is it the same, is it different? The biggest difference, in my opinion, is accountability. Mm-hmm. So obviously in the workplace, when you have a paid direct report, you have mechanisms to keep one, you know, to keep that person accountable. And there are ways to follow up on that. In a volunteer world, there are ways to hold people accountable. Most organizations have bylaws that will serve as a guide that will, in a very broad stroke, explain what you do if someone's not fulfilling their volunteer leadership commitment. But executing on that is extremely difficult with a volunteer leader. And so you really don't want to have to get to that point.
Right.
And with a volunteer leader, I don't really see it so much as holding people accountable, like popping them on the hand and saying, why didn't you do what you were supposed to do? You know, I really see it more as people, more as teamwork. So if there is a volunteer leader that is having a hard time fulfilling their commitment, the way you intervene in the workplace is different from the way you would intervene with a volunteer leader. With a volunteer leader, you come in and you find out how you can support that person, how you can help that person. That's a healthy practice, regardless of if you're in the workplace or in the volunteer space. But in the volunteer space, it's more about, listen, we've got your back. We're going to help make this happen. And you're not on the hook for it because you're a volunteer. And we're thankful that you're volunteering your time. And we understand that you don't want to not be able to fulfill your commitment, but circumstances have made it to where you're having a hard time fulfilling your commitment.
Right. So
all hands on deck, we'll all come in and we'll all make it happen. And oftentimes, if you have someone who's genuinely kind of slacking off, not for a real, not necessarily for a big reason, but just slacking off in general, they'll realize, oh, other people are coming to the plate. Maybe I should make a little bit more effort. But if they are genuinely struggling and they have life events going on that it's making them hard to fulfill their commitment, my idea as a leader of volunteers is that I want them to have a wonderful volunteer experience regardless of how well they're performing. I want them to feel like they're a part of something that they care about and that those people are there for them just as much as they're trying to be there for other people. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I mean, and that's, I work at First Sun Employee Assistance Program, and that's kind of the whole crux of an employee assistance program. When you have an employee who's struggling and their work is suffering, how about let's help them out? We've got counseling and financial and legal services and elder care and child care, and let's get you what you need so you can get back on track. And same kind of concept, principle. And also,
that's
exactly
right.
Yeah, and also, kind of, I love that, circle back around why you're doing this to begin with. What's your why? And let's appeal to your professionalism, if it depends on if they're having difficulty, let's rally. But if there's, like you said, just slacking off, maybe need to be reminded of their why and appeal to that.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you can quickly lose sight of why you do what you do, if you focus on
tasks and duties and
deadlines and all of that. And then, I mean, that doesn't mean we don't need to meet deadlines or that we don't need to deliver on what people are expecting of us, but it for sure makes a different experience whenever everyone is on the same page about why you do what you do. And I think that having your mission at the center, at the core of everything that you do, tremendously changes your outcome. And that is the case if you're working with volunteer leaders or if you're working with your direct reports in the workplace.
To know that I made a difference, to know that I counted, my input help someone else, all of those things, instead of here's something I'm crossing off my to-do list so I can, go home and be done for the day. No, you're making a difference.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think making a difference is obviously huge. It's definitely what drives many of us, but even, different companies, different workplaces have different missions. They're on a different campaign, and I think that as long as people are aligned and they can have a very healthy level of buy-in to what that mission is, then you are coming alongside of other people with a common goal in mind. So I have kind of a definition of leadership that I use a lot that I've just kind of compiled from my work and things that find are important. And I believe effective leadership is when you can effectively mobilize a group of people around a common goal to get things done. So the idea at the end of the day is that things need to get done, right? That's, and why, I mean, if you ask the question, why do you put leaders into leadership positions to start with? It's because you need someone to lead the cause, whatever it is that you're trying to get done. That's your end deliverable, is something has to be, get done. But to do that effectively, a leader has to be able to effectively mobilize the group of people around that common goal. And as they mobilize around that common goal, guess what? Things just start getting done. And the thing that I think is phenomenal is, and we talked about this a little bit in the last conversation that we had, people have incredible ideas.
Yes.
People have, they can come up with the most creative solutions. They can bring something to the table that one person or two people would have never thought of, but you put four or five people together, or 10, 12, 15 people together, and suddenly you're starting to really create some energy around your common goal. And you know, suddenly you're getting more things done. You're getting things done in a better way. You know, you're working smarter, not harder. I think that by mobilizing people around this common goal, you are able to get things done very well. And in fact, that idea brings me back to a thought about the Association for Talent Development, because the vision statement for the organization is to create a world that works better. Hmm. So
I love that kind of play on words.
That's right. Our vision is to create a world that works better. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you realize that's the end goal, and we are, you know, that's the vision of the perfect day when everything has worked out, you know, when we've done our job, that's what it's going to look like.
Very satisfying. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you for being back on the show and for sharing a little bit about the Association for Talent Development and your wisdom on working with volunteers. I just so enjoyed talking to you. You're so insightful and know your stuff.
Aw, well, thanks. I enjoy talking about it. I'm not only in my work with ATD, you know, we have a ton of volunteers leading this organization, but also in my work with Farm Bureau, we have, it is a grassroots organization. So from 47 boards of directors and probably 150 committees at the local level, at the state level, I'd say we likely have 30, 35 committees. So probably over 2,000 leaders who are volunteering within the organization, and then you multiply that all across the country, and it's really phenomenal the number of people, and every single one of those folks are doing it on a volunteer basis. So you know that they have to care about the reason why they're doing it.
Yeah, all of this in action.
That's exactly right.
Well, I know you said it at the beginning of the show, but if you could, two things. Where can people go to find out more about ATD? And where can people go to get in touch with you if they'd like to know a little bit more about you and all that you're involved in?
Oh, sure. So you can go to td.org. TD for talent development.org is the national ATD website. And if you want to join, you can click on membership. And in fact, you can join locally on that site as well. There's a chapter locator on td.org. You can find the chapter that is closest to you. And if you're in the state of South Carolina, then you will find the ATD Midlands chapter listed on there, and that will actually give you access to the whole state of South Carolina. And you can visit our local chapter website as well, which is atdmidlands.org. And as far as getting in contact with me, you can find me on LinkedIn, Jessica Cabrera, and I'm the president of ATD in South Carolina, and I'm the director of member engagement and leadership development for Farm Bureau. So love to connect.
Thank you. And thank you for all you do. Until next time, everybody, have a great day. Thank you for listening to the Well Hello Leader podcast.
Now it's your turn to help someone else be better at work. Be sure to check out all of the services we offer employees, along with coaching and training options for leaders. You'll find our website at firstsuneap.com. On social media, you can find First Sun EAP on Facebook, follow First Sun EAP on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to like and subscribe to our First Sun EAP YouTube channel. Take care and have a great day.